Now may I say a word concerning loyalty to the church. We see much indifference. There are those who say, the church won't dictate to me how to think about this, that, or the other, or how to live my life. No, I reply, the church will not dictate to any man how he should think or what he should do. The church will point out the way and invite every member to live the gospel and enjoy the blessings that come of such living. The church will not dictate to any man, but it will counsel, it will persuade, it will urge, and it will expect loyalty from those who profess membership therein. On this occasion, I'm not going to talk about the good or bad of prohibition, but rather of uncompromising loyalty to the church. How grateful my brother and I feel, how profoundly grateful for the tremendous faith of so many Latter-day Saints who, when facing a major decision on which the church has taken a stand, align themselves with that position. And I am especially grateful to be able to say that among those who are loyal are men and women of achievement, of accomplishment, of education, of influence, of strength, highly intelligent and capable individuals. Each of us has to face the matter. Either the church is true or it is a fraud. There is no middle ground. It is the church and kingdom of God, or it is nothing.
This is Infants on Thrones, the philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Listener Essay.
Gotta love me some Heakley. In today's episode, I'm joined with my friend Alan.
Yeah, hi, this is Alan. My title is Goodness versus Loyalty, the Little Known Dichotomy.
Who submitted his essay, and it was just a one-on-one with him. And of course, we have an exciting cameo appearance from Brother Jake, which was actually a very pleasant surprise. So I don't want to spend too much time breaking bread or talking about what he's going to talk about. Instead, I just want to get right to it. Take it away, Alan.
Goodness versus loyalty, the little-known dichotomy. I work in an environment where trust, teamwork, and following the rules are placed above most all other things. There is an us versus world feel, and the absolute expectation of loyalty is palpable. From childhood, I have always known that loyalty was a good thing. After all, loyalty was one of the few majestic words 10 feet tall painted on the junior high gym wall, along with teamwork, truth, honesty, and trust. Loyalty is part of the Boy Scout law, along with being friendly, courteous, and kind, along with other noble words. So you can imagine my surprise when I came to the realization that loyalty was a horrible concept. What brought on this flip in my head? Ironically enough, it was during a leadership class sponsored by my employer. Beth, the instructor, told of a very personal story about a trying time she was having with her teenage daughter, Kim. One evening, Beth and Kim got into an argument. Kim ran away from home without leaving a note. She went to her best friend's home, Angela. Beth called the police and began searching nearby parks. Finally, Beth paid a visit to Angela's home. Beth asked Angela if she knew where Kim was. Beth's question to Angela placed Angela in an awkward situation. Angela can be loyal to her best friend and lie to Beth, who is genuinely concerned for Kim's well-being. Or Angela can tell the truth to ease Beth's mind and stop needless search parties. I had never contemplated how truth and loyalty could be at odds with each other. I raised my hand and said those two ideas are not mutually exclusive, and that if Beth and Angela could reason things out just a little, both truth and loyalty could be achieved. It required emotion to be put on the back burner. Beth needed to tell Angela that no matter what Angela said, she was not in trouble, and that Beth was grateful for the love and friendship shown to her daughter. Beth needed to explain that her only concern was that Kim was safe and that her needs were being taken care of, that Kim was not cold, hungry, and wandering the streets. She also needed to tell Angela that Kim did not need to come home anytime soon. At that point, Angela could be honest with Beth and not betray the friendship of Kim by keeping her for a few days while things got ironed out. And in the long run, being truthful would be better for all parties, even though it would, in the short term, seem like a betrayal to Kim, but in the long term, she was being more loyal to be honest. And just like that, the problem of mutual exclusivity of truth and loyalty had been solved. But it still didn't quite rest well with me. On my commutes to work, I struggled with the idea. In the Kim and Beth vignette, a lie must still be told. Angela would have to lie to Kim about her mother coming over. She couldn't tell the truth without betraying a trust. So like all good Mormons, I segmented the problem into black and white. People and groups are either good or bad. I can support a person or a group because they are, or their cause is, fundamentally something that is good, meaning improving the well-being of conscious creatures, or bad, increasing the level of misery of conscious creatures. And while it is often difficult to measure which things are good or bad, better or worse, there are some things which are definitively bad things. In our history, a good example of this is the Mountain Meadows Massacre. There must have been some of those people involved that said, "This is wrong, but to let the Fancher Party leave would be betraying my people." Yet it happened. We are Mormons, and we are the definition of good people, aren't we? And weren't those involved fulfilling a loyalty owed to the church? This is when I ultimately came to the conclusion that loyalty, the idea of loyalty, is fundamentally bad and a morally corrupt idea. I'm constantly making decisions about what groups and causes I am going to support, what candidate for office, what goods I purchase, what church I belong to. Each day I wake up and make a conscious decision to support the country that I live in and for which I am a citizen by not moving to another country. Why do I do this? Because I believe that my country is fundamentally good. Additionally, the products I buy, the groups and people with whom I associate are, overall, improving the well-being of conscious creatures. But I do not support my country due to loyalty. I do not support it because this happened to be the place that I was born in. I do not continue purchasing products because that is what my mother bought. I do not support churches because that's where I was baptized when I was 8. Even if I could have fully consciously made that decision at 8, the church could have gone bad. My values may have changed. I don't support things even if they have supported me in the past. Supporting things that may have helped me in the past is simply quid pro quo, a bribe. I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine later. At best, the only place that I can see a place for loyalty would be giving a group, a cause, or person the benefit of the doubt. That is, things don't look right on the surface, or we don't or we can't know enough of the facts to make a good judgment at this time, giving some slack, because they have been good in the past. However, one should never allow a group that once was good and now has apparently turned bad to get away without an explanation. Feet must always be held to the fire. If the explanation goes against the person's moral grounding, support for the group must be pulled out. This allows the bad groups and ideas to wither. Loyalty to that group only continues to support a corrupt cause. Indeed, I will be wary of anyone who calls for my support out of duty or loyalty. They must make an argument for me to support them because they are fundamentally good, not because I owe them. This is true even for family. However, because it is family, there is much more invested in it. I will work much harder. I will place much more effort in trying to influence those who are closest to me to improve, to do that which is right, and to be good for the sake of goodness. But at some point, there comes a time when even this tie must be severed if the person continues down a destructive road. This may sound harsh, but I will have to make hard decisions. If I discover that my child, brother, sister, parents have intentionally harmed others and plan to continue to do so, for instance, joining hate groups, I must pull support for that loved one. However, I must at the same time always be willing to let that person back into my life if they are willing to reform. Loyalty only perpetuates bad behaviors, even with family members. However, I must always be willing to hear another person's point of view about how they are right and how I might be wrong. But if I begin making calls out to support me out of loyalty, it may be because I have no good argument left to make. So there you have it. Support those things in life which are good because they are good, and not those things which happen to have been close to you or to things which have benefited you in the past. Be wary of institutions which call for loyalty. It may be because they are unable to make an argument on merit alone.
So, why don't we talk about, because obviously when I listened to your essay out, it was quite content rich.
Yeah.
And it seemed like you were coming out like hard hitting right from the get-go. And to be fair, it's really, really intriguing the way that you really lay out goodness versus loyalty, because I don't think there's a lot of discussions that I've been involved with or even heard or read about where people, you know, talk about the good and the bad that surrounds loyalty.
Yeah, like I said in the essay, was you always hear about how loyalty is a good thing. There's all of these great attributes that we always go around. And I was actually just thinking about this yesterday, was we always think of another one, which is always a good one, is pride, right? And
right.
I thought about how Kimball said there is no such thing as righteous pride. A lot of people always fight that, and I go, you know, I kind of dig that statement a little bit. No such thing as righteous pride. I think that loyalty kind of falls into that same kind of category of if there's a thing which you want me to do, and your argument is do this out of loyalty, then I think that your motives might be a little suspect. Otherwise, you would be asking me to do something because it's going to help another person, or this is just the right thing to do, versus do this out of loyalty. That's where I kind of came to.
I think it's absolutely fascinating when you look at it that way, because the phrase that comes to my mind as I hear you talk about this is blind obedience. You know, you got a general authority who's got a really sharp looking red tie in his Mr. Max suit, and he's up there and he says, you know, trust me.
Right.
I mean, you guys know me. I'm the prophet, or I'm an apostle. Trust me. And there's like this deference that's automatically given from the membership, and a deference that he automatically expects, I would assume, that there's like this undercurrent of loyalty that's happening behind the scenes, where it's almost like he could walk up to the podium and wink and say, we're on the same page, right? I mean, you're gonna give me to the benefit of the doubt out of a sense of loyalty.
Yep. And I think that there is some place to be. There is maybe, let me waffle a little bit here. There is a bit of a benefit of the doubt that is where loyalty should come into, right?
You mentioned that towards the end of your essay. Yeah.
Yeah, there is, you know, when in doubt, when you don't have good evidence for the way to go, right? There's a little bit of trust, you know, okay, this person has been good to me in the past, or, you know, and while it might look a little unethical, the thing which he or she is going to do, it might look a little unethical, I'm going to stick behind them. I'm going to give them a little bit of leeway and start looking at it. Because the other thing that can potentially happen is you cut off all ties, and once you cut off all ties, you have no more influence with that person either to help them be a better person too. So that's another place where loyalty might, not necessarily loyalty, but sticking with a person, sticking with a person as loyalty goes.
Right. So you're not saying that loyalty is all bad, but you're not saying that loyalty is all good, because I mean, you often think you want to be loyal to your spouse or your partner, right? There's like a almost like a loyalty contract if you're married.
Right. Well, I think definition does kind of come in a little bit. You know, I stay with my wife because I love my wife and because I think that she is overall a good and moral person. And I do things that my wife wants me to do because they are good things to do, not because they are the things which a person who is loyal to her would do. So that's why, you know, it's some of the things that that come in. But at some point, we all have to come to a conclusion. If somebody's continually doing bad, immoral, I don't want to say righteous, but wrong things, you've got to say, okay, I can no longer influence. There's no way that I'll be able to influence this person into a different mode of thinking or a different way of life. So I just got to cut ties because the group that I'm with is unredeemable, and I need to pull my support from them. It could, you know, and it could be all the way to a nation. I live in this nation, but this nation has become so corrupt that I need to pull my support for the nation and move out and leave and, you know, go to something that is more ostensibly a better nation. You think of like political parties, right? We probably change political parties more frequently than anything else, right? We change our political. Nobody ever makes an argument to stay with a political party out of morality, out of loyalty. But it's all about, well, I didn't like them because of their stance on this. And it, let's take like the most polarizing of all things, abortion, right?
Sure.
Abortions are absolutely immoral. That's why I'm Republican. Freedom and free to choose is the more moral side. So I'm going to be, nobody ever says, no, you should stick with us because you've been Republican in the past. You know, so.
Right. Well, I mean, I think those kinds of things might still happen there, but I think they are on the decline, like becoming more and more rare.
Yeah. 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 I can see that back in, you know, Lincoln time, I guess, and stuff like that. But you would definitely hear that the same, that type of rhetoric from a church still. You hear loyalty rhetoric from the nation state itself, from probably the greatest place that you hear loyalty requirements is in the military. And I think that that's where it's potentially, it's a hard thing to do, right? You don't want to have people, you need to have in the military somebody say, you know, go take that hill or go take that street. You need to own that street right there. And there's going to be a moral decision while you run down that street that you may be killing a child, but in the same sense, that child may be pointing an AK at you, you know, and you need to be really loyal to the nation at that point. And there's, so I do talk with, I'm currently living in the Middle East, and I get to interface a lot with members of the military or former members of the military quite often that have seen some pretty horrible things, and they need to be, you need to be absolutely loyal, because if there is this sense of disloyalty, it could be called fairly suspect, as far as potentially you could be a spy because you have access to sensitive data, things like that. So
right. Well, and you even talk about, you use the story of the Kim and Beth towards the beginning. And you talk about the truth and loyalty dilemma. And I think it's interesting because even when you're talking about the military, I start thinking about generals and captains and colonels actually need, you know, that sense of loyalty to their, you know, their privates and the people under them. Because if they give them an order without all the information, like something that would cause them dissonance, like, whoa, 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 you want us to do what? That goes against something I hold dear. Or, you know, I don't know, like if they want to start invading this land that they thought was peaceful or something like that. I don't know. I'm just pulling something out of my ass. But if the general has orders and needs these guys to do something, I guess, in a sense, you know, order them with blind obedience. Like, hey, you guys know me. You guys are supposed to trust me. There's a sense of loyalty that's supposed to abound us. Now get out there and do what I said.
Right.
Don't
right.
question my orders. So, yeah, and that can even go, like you said, it can go to a business and corporation atmosphere. And obviously, kind of the underlying message is it can also go to a church atmosphere.
Right. Well, you know, and I brought this out, is how much did this requirement or for how Mountain Meadows came about, you know, was Mountain Meadows, did that happen out of misplaced sense of loyalty to the church? You know, that there was these this us versus them mentality that I can see in early church. It's us against the world, and nobody stopped to think that maybe not everybody in the world deserves to die. You know, this is
yeah.
a passing group of people that are coming through my territory, you know, and maybe they didn't have this stuff. And I think that we can see how leadership, even in there was lies that were being told to the local members about, you know, they had the gun of the Joseph Smith, you know, that was pushed out. I don't know whether that was happening at the time or whether that was a post hoc justification, you know, for people to say that they did the right thing because they were both being boastful of having Joseph Smith's gun, or, you know, the gun that killed Joseph Smith, or, you know, things like that.
Yeah, there were a lot of rumors and speculation, I'm sure, were being flown around in order to do this. But I think your example of Mountain Meadows Massacre, I mean, I almost applauded when I listened to this in your essay, because I knew I was like, hey, man, he's talking about my issue. Woo. But I was, you know, it is perfect. And when you brought up the fact that there had to have been someone, maybe some ones, maybe, you know, maybe there were multiple people that had to been against this whole thing. Like when the stake president, you know, like Higby and Haight, when those guys came in and they gave the orders, like, okay, this is what's going to happen, okay, guys? There had to have been, I mean, this is the way I like to think about it. There had to have been a few people, or at least one person, that may have said openly and publicly, like, dude, this is a bad idea. Isn't this cold-blooded murder? We're going to disarm them, and then we're going to shoot them in the head?
Right.
I mean, that goes to my, you know, my very example of why this was such a big issue for me, because, I mean, it's freaking murder. It's murder under a white flag of truce, for hell's sakes.
Right.
It's not...
Yep.
You come in with peaceful actions, and then you make sure that you do everything possible so you can reduce all of the casualties on your side. It's so cowardice.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyway, have you speculated that? Obviously, in your essay, you have thought about that there had to have been a few people like raising their hands in opposition, saying, "I don't agree with this," but. I mean, you've read a lot about the massacre. Have you read anything or heard anything that there was, like, documented proof?
I've never – that's the thing is I have not heard of anybody's questioning at all the leadership of the church at that time.
Because I even asked Will Bagley, and he said, you know how long I've been looking for something that, you know, there was a dissenter who said, I don't agree with this at all. I'm with you guys. I'm out. And then they left.
Yeah. Was it that those people who were involved, were they really mentally thinking, I have to be loyal to the church, or was it just a gut reaction? I don't know if anybody was trying to make an argument to do a thing because of loyalty. Maybe they just did it because they were loyal.
Yeah, it's hard to say. But all I know is that, you know, I just keep hoping that there's a journal somewhere buried in an attic and it'll come out. Where they said, I disagreed firmly and I made a protest against Higby and Haight, and I told them I didn't want to do it. And I don't know, that'd be so powerful to read, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, at least they didn't kill the smallest people, you know, or at least all of the smallest.
there you are with your glass half full approach.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
All right. So they left a few alive, young kids under 8. All right, that's good.
I was just going to ask, where did I go wrong, though? And I keep thinking about this, and I was kind of hoping, and maybe you can tie some other people in.
The loyalty essay was really interesting to me. It's a topic I've been thinking about for a while now, in fact, and I think the tension over loyalty was what started my journey away from the church. In the wake of Prop 8, right after my mission, I felt like I was being asked to support and participate in behavior that conflicted with my own personal moral compass. And that tension is what led me to view the church through a lens that I'd never really considered before. But the essay also raised some fundamental questions for me. While the theory of what was said was something I definitely agreed with, the practice is a little more complicated. One major question is, what is loyalty? At what point does the propensity to give somebody the benefit of the doubt turn into substituting groupthink for personal moral accountability? And when that line is crossed, how should one react? If, for example, I find that my close friend is running like a Ponzi scheme or something, should I cut all ties? Can one really, as they say, love the sinner, hate the sin? Or is that just another form of loyalty? And up to this point, my thought has been focused on sins of commission relative to loyalty, like manning a phone bank for Prop 8 when one feels that the action is immoral. But what about the sins of omissions? What about all the times I've allowed homophobic remarks to drop unchallenged? Do I have a duty to resist that kind of implicit loyalty? Should I speak out, or would I just be acting like an asshole? But, you know, maybe that's the point of all of this. Maybe the struggle is the point. Because once you decided to stop allowing a sense of loyalty to define what morality is, you're kind of on your own. You're accountable for what you do. And that's what adulthood is. That's what it means to be an individual. And there's something exhilarating and terrifying about that. In the words of the immortal Obi-Wan Kenobi,
"That's good. You've taken your first step into a larger world."
Anyway, thanks for the essay.
Because I would like to hear where I'm wrong. Where does is loyalty, how is it a virtue?
For me, I think it can come as a virtue with a lot of conditions. And I think that's part of the reason why I probably align with what you're saying. And I love the fact that, you know, you're like raising awareness to it, because it is, I mean, I look at like a spouse, you know, like a marriage couple or something like that. If you're staying married just out of a sense of loyalty and you're miserable, you hate them and blah, 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 that usually almost never works.
Right.
You know, it's like loyalty is actually a hindrance, and it is bad because, you know, like you said, the truth is you two don't love each other. You don't want to be anywhere near each other. Okay, and let's take the example, like they don't have kids, so the obligations to stay together is almost nil. All except for there's this like obligation out of loyalty. And maybe there's like an obligation that, you know, we took an oath, or we said till death do you part, or we're married till eternity or whatever. Maybe that's part of it and part of the loyal thing. Like I made an oath or whatever. But maybe that I often think that there probably is this like loyalty thing that's happening. Because I feel loyal to my wife. I feel loyal to my employer. And for the longest time, I did feel extremely loyal to the church. Like when I was on the high council, I remember in one of the disciplinary meetings we were in, I didn't even feel comfortable in raising any sort of opposition out of a sense of loyalty. Like, you know, he is the stake president. I have to give him so much deference. He knows what he's talking about. He's got experience. I'm just a 30 something year old on the high council. What do I know? You know?
I would love to be and listen to be in one of those disciplinary councils to listen, you know, how much is the advocate, the other side advocate, really advocating for the other person because they are more loyal to the church. You know, you're not getting your like closest friend to be your advocate, right? It's just some
right.
dude who was appointed, you know, why don't you go find a good thing about this guy, you know? But in reality, there is the stake president, the bishop, who you are automatically going to believe is a better person than this person who is being brought up on a love trial. Or what is it, a love?
Court of love.
Court of love.
Love trial. I like yours better. You're absolutely right. There's like this heavy-handed bias that's often ignored. Like, all you guys are all on the same team. Okay, now let's split it up. You six are for, you six are against. All right, go team, go. Now break.
Right.
You know, it just seems, I mean, there is independent thought. I mean, when I was involved with mine, it did seem to work out okay, but it was a pretty relatively you know, informal case. You know, he was trying to get his disfellowshipment removed or whatever. So it didn't seem that big of a deal. It seemed like all of us came to the same conclusion. Like, he wants back in full fellowship. Why would we hold him back? And I was on the side, like, that we were supposed to be critical. Like, well, you know, maybe he's not as repentant as he says he is.
Right.
Like, I'm supposed to shed doubt on his sincerity. Like, well, you know, he did close his eyes a little too long when he said that, you know, he prays and fasts. So I don't know. So stupid. Anyway, that's way off topic. No, but to go back to your, you want to talk about how, you know, where you were wrong. At the beginning, you said the statement, the idea of loyalty is fundamentally bad. Even, I mean, you had to know that's going to raise eyebrows.
Yeah, obviously that's the shocker statement.
Because I listened to him like, I got to listen to this guy. He's got to be going somewhere with this.
So the point behind the idea of loyalty is being fundamentally bad. If you're going to be making I mentioned that it's not about being loyal, but making an argument for loyalty, I guess,
right,
is maybe where it's fundamentally bad. Being close and supportive of close family members when they are sick or hurting, and you're going to maybe be expending a lot of family resources to get somebody better, to pay for doctor bills or whatnot. Sure. We need to have that stick together, pull together to help somebody else out. And you could call that loyalty. But you could also say, rather than making a argument for loyalty with, you know, helping that person out, you could say, this is a person who I love who is hurting. We should do what we can to alleviate their pain and to make them whole. So I guess being loyal, because it's the good thing to do. That's kind of how I'm trying to make a distinction there, is that when you're wanting to do something for another person, do it because it's a good thing to do, not because you're doing it because you're loyal to them, even though.
Yeah. You mentioned being good or doing good for the sake of goodness.
Right.
But I do want to go back, because there was another statement that you'd said, I think it was about halfway to two thirds of the way through, and you'd mentioned it just a minute ago, where you said that, you know, maybe we should even pull support for a loved one if they start to support like hate groups.
Right.
And I immediately thought, you know, what if I had like a sister or a brother or a parent or even a cousin who was, you know, heavily involved in the Westboro Baptist Church, you know, that God Hate Fags church or whatever. Yeah. When you had said that, where you said maybe we should pull support, elaborate a little bit. Are you saying that we should, like, you know, for the sake of integrity, you know, maybe not shun them, but something along those lines?
So yeah, the idea there is, boy, I don't know. I hadn't really thought. I've always been an anti-shunner.
Me too.
Yeah, that's okay. So that's a good point. I'll have to think about that a little bit more. The idea that I had there is that they want me to be part of their lives, right?
Right.
They want me to be, and I want to be part of their lives. I want to understand them as well, right? But we have to, at some point, make a realization that this is a hateful person that I maybe shouldn't be married to, because I shouldn't use the wife. You were using a cousin example.
Yeah, cousin.
Because I can't divorce my cousin.
Sure.
I can't walk away from my... Well, in some ways, it should be easier to walk away from your cousin than from your wife, right? And you want to still be engaged with that person, but you're certainly not going to be attending the next Ku Klux Klan meeting.
Right.
They're going to be wanting you to, hey, let's come to church. These Westboro Baptist guys are making a lot of sense to me, and they want you to go be part of their life, and you go, okay, well, maybe I'll go investigate so that I understand where you're coming from. I can try. We always have to strive for that. That understand first, seek to understand, and then to be understood. So we need to always be looking at that person. Maybe these guys do make a good point. Maybe Westboro Baptist does make a good point, right? So we need to go and investigate that side and understand it. But ultimately, if you come back from that investigation and see, these guys are kind of unethical, I can't. And you'd have to be able to say to the to your cousin, look, I like you and all, but that's just batshit crazy.
And, you can even use those words.
Right. I think I would, I guess.
Right. Well, and this is what I like is I don't necessarily think that I disagree with your statement. I actually think it's a discussion. It's almost like you're bringing awareness to the delicate balance of this. Like if you have a cousin or if you have, I mean, a sibling for crying out, like bring it in even a little bit closer. If you had like a brother that became, you know, like a minister for that church, that would cause some serious rifts.
Right.
And I mean, think about it. If you're like a Thanksgiving dinner, I mean, how do you deal with that sort of thing? I mean, do you immediately think, well, I can't even let my kids play with their kids and vice versa. And I think you're right, where it's almost like you kind of have to draw a line in the sand. Like, listen, dude, you're protesting military funerals for hell's sakes. I mean, your church is not only kind of unethical, but like you said, it's batshit crazy, dude. I mean, y'all should be in straitjackets.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know a really good, delicate way to put it, but just because, you know, the rage starts to boil through me and I start to think, yeah, tie them all up. You know, I don't know. But is there anything else that maybe you want to touch on? Or
no, I think that really we need to be seeking out for truth where we can find it. Use all that we can, all of our faculties that we can to make good and proper decisions at all point. And I'm just going to advocate for the idea that to catch yourself, to be thinking about if you ever making an argument, you want somebody to do something for you, that the bottom line is never make an argument for loyalty. Because when you essentially, if you think that your last argument for support for your cause or your person or your whatever it is a thing which is because of loyalty, there's two things happening. You don't have any other good argument to hold to, because otherwise you'd be making that argument that you should be helping me out because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, but you're right. If you're using that as your foundation for your argument, just using the sense of loyalty as you want to do this just because you're a part of this organization or because you're a part of this nation or because you're a part of this church, that I do think that you're right, that the idea of that is fundamentally wrong. So I agree with you there.
Yep.
And I do think that just having this discussion, I mean, dude, I honestly want to just keep talking about this because I haven't shed enough awareness in my own life on this. You know, and it when I listened to your essay, it took me to one of the talks that I was having when I was a high councilman, and it wasn't a topic that I was very happy with, and it was, you know, it was on obedience or whatever, and I'd been talking to several wards about it, and I was having quite a bit of dissonance, and I kept thinking, why am I talking about this? And I felt like, well, because they told me to. So it almost like, in a way, I was going to that loyalty thing. Like, well, he is a stake president. I'm loyal to him. He told me what to do. I disagree with it on a fundamental level. But I kind of have to give the deference to this guy out of a sense of loyalty, blah, blah, blah. I hate that I'm admitting this.
Right.
But that's what happened. So,
yeah. Well, you know, admitting is the first step to...
Hi, my name's Tom, and I'm an
addict. I'm a former loyalist.
I love that. I really want to thank Alan for taking the time to put the essay together and submit it to us, and for coming on and enduring some of my antics. and some of my bad sense of humor, but I really enjoyed the discussion, and I actually hope that we can explore this further. So for those of you that are looking to do something similar, you can go ahead and just go to our website at infantsonthrones.com and click the contact page and submit your own essay, and you can be just like Alan. Get your very own podcast where you can be the star. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones. Infants on Thrones.